Good morning, everybody. My name's Colin Rawlins. Pleasure to be here with you today to talk about asset preservation and fleet renewal. We're going to start with the fact that we've brought some real live disruption to the proceedings today because we have a slight change to our original panel lineup. I'll start here. Somebody was originally planned, Georgios Poularas, who's the CEO of Enisa. Spent many years, I believe 11 years, Georgios, if I'm not mistaken, at Bernard Schulte. Yeah. 11 and a half years, Bernard Schulte. So some of those in Hamburg, so Georgios is familiar with the beautiful city of Hamburg. To the next panelist, we have Pio Sharma, who had a slight name sign malfunction, but never mind. Welcome, Pio. I've known Pio for many years in different roles, but Pios works for NSB, has also lived in Hamburg for a long time, and is in charge, so I understand, of all things financial, if I'm not mistaken, Pios, that's a fair summary. Yeah, so welcome, Pios. We have another change to our panel. We have Holger Jablonski, who is the business development manager from Intership Navigation, also going through or about to go through some interesting developments with the recently announced merger with InterOrient on the ship management side. So maybe we can touch on that as well in terms of the ship management part, Olga. And then last but not least, we have Clemens Töpfer, is the managing director of Töpfer Transport, has been with Töpfer Transport for many years now. And Töpfer Transport is currently this year celebrating, and I quote, 50 years of passionate work. Yeah, so a 50-year anniversary this year. Congratulations, Clemens. So let's jump in. We wanted to start just by talking in general about the challenges that ship owners face between asset preservation, the existing fleet, and fleet renewal. And maybe just start off with a question around the challenge for ship owners and managers of what to do with their assets. It's a quote that I picked up from a well-known business person many years ago who once said that some of the best deals that happen are the ones that you don't do. Now, just first question to the panel, surprise question. Did anybody take a guess who said that? It's a topical question.
Mm-hmm. Is it a trick?
No. It was Donald Trump, believe it or not.
Oh, my God.
Who said that many, many, many years ago. Anyway, let's continue. I have another quote, though, about asset preservation from another American gentleman called John Sawhill many, many years ago. He said, in the end, our society will be defined not only by what we created, but by what we refuse to destroy. And in terms of asset preservation, I thought that was quite relevant. So what I'm going to do now is just move on. I'll start off with Georgios, if I may, and just give us your view based on your fleet on the kind of challenges that you're facing with your existing assets, what kind of projects maybe you've worked on to improve them, and what your view is on fleet renewal on the new construction side.
I would like to start with a general statement that it is a company's approach that we order the vessels that we operate until we make the specification construction, the plan approval, the on-site supervision, and having also the management of the assets from day one of their delivery. This results that our tanker and container fleet, which is a majority of our fleet, they are all new building deliveries. Not now, this is the approach we follow traditionally, I would say. As regards our bulk carrier fleet, there are only four vessels they bought in the second-hand market. Basically the decision to renew the fleet was made some years back. And it was a very bold decision because the expansion actually made during the pandemic that make things even more challenging. The decisions what vessels to order was made on the condition that we order the vessels, the best vessels we could order at the time we made the decision. since there are plenty of uncertainty about, and still is, about the prevailing technology of the propulsion fuel, then we decided to order vessels with the best possible technology at the time we made it. As regards our plans and how we can further improve or make decisions about the future, we have decided that the trigger is the energy efficiency. So we decided that we will make an energy efficiency assessment of the whole fleet on all three segments. And based on the results, we will do our maths and actually decide what to do. As regards the tankers, because they are all new vessels, I mean, the average age of our tanker fleet is 3.9 years. Situation was very pretty straightforward because the vessels are already optimized. So they've been delivered, optimized, the hulls, the hull efficiency, plus with ESDs. And any potential improvement could be in the potential installation of technologies like wind assisted propulsion or changing the hull coatings to very low friction paints. It's got our container fleet because the vessels they are in now, they have completed the second special survey cycle and now they are entering into the third one. With discussion and basically after the initiative of our charterers, we made a very long study to see how we can further improve the performance of these vessels. It was a long study, had a dynamic assessment, and that actually decided to make massive modifications. And in that respect, invest on the existing fleet and extend the economical life of these vessels, making them more closer or even at the same level of energy efficiency with new buildings. This dictated massive modifications. And it was a very challenging project from the project management point of view. Dictated changing the forward part of the vessel, the bulbous bow, changing propeller, derating the main engine, installation of scrubber, plus cargo boost, increasing the capability of the TEU. We are now in the completion of this project, which was very, very demanding. And yes, I think that we are we have seen massive improvement. Massive improvement on the speed consumption characteristics, and particularly with the extension of the ton mile after the avoidance of Suez. This, of course, will pay off, will offset the cost very, very fast.
George, excuse me for interrupting. Just on that point, just a quick question. I'm not sure what you can tell us, if you can tell us anything about it, but what was the level of willingness on the charterer's side to help with those projects? Did they actually participate?
Absolutely.
Financially?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Without saying details, actually it was mainly their initiative.
Mm. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, the bulk carriers are slightly different case because of the technical issues. We have seen bulk carriers of the Capesize segment. We have seen various vessels with different characteristics, particularly the powering. We have faced this challenge to meet the EXI regulations and the engine performance limitations. Some of them could be possible to be done with a normal limitation, 12, 13, 15% of reduction, some of them high, 35, 37%, meaning that when the limitation is high, I don't want to be too technical, but means that you have less tolerance to play with the powering. And this restricts you in the process. So in case to optimize further the hull and decide what is needed to be done in order to extend the life of these vessels and make them energy efficient, is more challenging. Technically, it's much more challenging, yeah, because you cannot easily change things. The scale is very, very big, and it is a result of financial calculation whether it really makes sense or not.
Okay. Georgios, thank you very much for that. I'm sure we'll come back to that in a few minutes, but thank you very much. Piotr, I'd like to switch to you now, if I may. as I mentioned before, your background more on the finance side, but you've been in shipping for a long time, and you're now working with the NSB Group, who have also developed, transformed from maybe you could say a traditional owner to more of an owner-manager type model with various different clients, I believe. So it'd be interesting to get your perspective on asset preservation, investing in existing ships versus new construction. Also, based on differences that you see between owners, either because of their own corporate setup or also possibly because of regional differences or cultural differences.
Thank you, Colin. Thank you. Interesting question. But maybe just to put things in perspective, I give a little bit of rundown on what we are as NSB Group, and that sort of boils down to how we see the various nuances of different owners. So NSB Group is a traditional ship management group, and we do both asset preservation and fleet renewal. But as in the disclaimer, which you would have always heard, on and behalf of owners as agents only. So that's what we do. But we have seen a lot of different variety of activities. It really boils down to the business model various owners have. Now, certain owners who are earning on the cargo and not so much on the vessel, like the big liner companies, for say, are very keen on asset preservation. They always have a model of new building versus asset preservation. Certain other owners who are more financially driven and who have to compete for their tonnage to be, you know, had in the market are always looking at fleet renewals to be able to have the younger tonnage. So, Colin, to answer that in a way, it is very much dependent on the business model. The cultural differences would not play so much, but the market differences play a big role for sure. The market conditions play, as we see today, the older vessels are being still accepted. So a lot of people are thinking about, you know, keeping their assets, seeing how they go in the market. In many other segments, you might have seen in the past when the oil majors had vessels on their own, they were pretty old compared to the vessels they were chartering in. So that was the era when they thought these could be preserved for a few years. Of course, with the changing rules and regulations, things are changing. So what we see essentially is a mixture of both, and very much is driven by the capacity of the owners and the business model they are driving to.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Pio. We'll move on now. First of all, I'm sure we'll come back to that as well, because I'd like to now switch to Holger. You work for Intership Navigation, as I mentioned before, on the business development side. And you are, would it be fair to say, also a more traditional family-owned business?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. What's your view on asset preservation versus fleet renewal?
I must say that we have been, of course, more than 36 years also part of an owners group. So we take the owner stance. But, of course, in the first place, we are ship managers. Yesterday, it came through the news that we've merged with Inter-Orient. So we became one, actually, as, let's say, officially from yesterday. The commercial operations will start in January, and so we are looking after about roughly 170 ships at the moment in our fleet. And this is where it already brings us to the question that Piers already mentioned. We have a diversity of ship owners. We have a diversity of different ships in different segments, operating different trades, sports, trams, not really so much liners. And then we come to the question of the age of the ships. In some of the segments, the age is critical. Where we need to do asset preservation for the sake of meeting the regulations and the matrices of the oil majors or chemical majors, where we are very much interested to keep our business stance in. But on the other side, we do also see a lot of dry bulk ships that are being, let's say, operating very special trades, very exotic areas, where the ship owners are taking, let's say, a different position. They are more interested in, let's say, the business to keep it running. But we do also have a number of different ship owners who are really interested to deal and also keep their assets value on a very high level. And not to forget, we have at the moment, I think, if I'm not mistaken, around 6,000 seafarers that are also looking after preservation of the assets, because the seafarers, I must point out here, are sometimes or very often overlooked. I mean, they are the key assets on our ships. We have several of them are serving already in our fleet for more than 20, 25 years. They know the ships inside out, whether AI on board or not. They know how to operate these ships pretty well. And even if there is any kind of solutions to be found, then they will find the solution on board. Together with our experts, of course, ashore. But I think we cannot really mention it too often that these guys are doing, let's say, the proactive preservation of the assets for the ship owners, of course. Like our motto, your ships, our people. That is something that has been proven well. But you can't really, and this is what I wanted to say, you can't really generalize which owners, which crates, which ships need to be treated in, let's say, a very special way. We do each of these ships manage very individual. We speak to the owners, we make the planning, because several of the ladies are sometimes also not the youngest. And we are, and we have been involved, and we will keep involved in a number of different technology modifications, technology-based modifications like we did in the past with, let's say, Mavis ducts, with special coatings. We're trying to take each of the projects very individual, very distinct, in order to find the best solution for each of the ships, each of the trades, and each of the ship owners, which is quite a challenge, to be honest. Because there is no standard solution, no solution for everyone in the same place.
Okay, thank you very much, Holger. Last but not least, Clemens, I know that your area of focus is slightly different in terms of short sea, MPP, and containers. I'm just curious to see from your perspective, the kind of owners and managers that you work with, how you see things developing there in terms of asset preservation, especially around the short sea area, and also new construction.
Well, first of all, as a ship broker active in new buildings, we have no interest in asset preservation.
Yep.
Straightforward.
But looking at the markets, in particular on the container side, we do see a lot of asset preservation and changes because the container market is the one where the ships which are 10 years old or older in particular have been built for different trading profile on speed in particular. So that's where the most is to gain on different propellers or bulbous bows, etc. So, and there we do see quite a number of projects, whether financially driven owners or liners, etc. So there's a lot of things happening. On the multipurpose and short sea side, we don't see much in that regard. And when looking at you know, the profile of, you know, speed profile, etc., is basically the same. And when looking at maybe new propulsion systems or winds, etc., you know, there's very, very little projects really in that segment. And there are the old ones out, Jumbo, you know, installing a sail on a 15-year-old heavy lifter. But these things are very little. So there we see not much there. But in general, what you have to look also from the fleet is basically all debt-free, not only by the market, but and particularly the German tonnage. They all got either they were sold or they got a haircut. And these ships all make money, and you know, in many cases you don't really need to change much. You have a good market and you can keep on trading for quite some time.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, Clemens. Giorgio, so just come back to you if I may. One thing that we see from Lloyd's Register, and I'm pretty sure it'll be the same for the other class societies in general, is that there had been at some point a higher expectation that the subject of engine retrofitting would come up. Yeah, but we can obviously tell that expectation has not really happened. I mean, there are a few projects. It's been much more focused on things that have already been mentioned, whether it's bulbous bows, plate schemes, propellers, that kind of thing. Have you, is engine retrofitting for methanol or whatever it may be, is that something that you've looked at or actively considered?
Only on a theoretical basis.
Yeah.
because those projects require extensive engineering work, engineering study. And of course, it is not only the cost of the vessel modification, the time that the vessel has to be of hire. With the first, the initial approach, I'm not saying that doesn't make any sense. However, we have to take into consideration a lot of things. The hull has to be modified. The storage must be different, depending on the fuel you will decide. The engine has to be modified extensively, the system. There are not so many shipyards that they have this experience already, so you have to take also this risk of the unknown engineering, particularly for the first vessel. This is different discussion, completely different discussion, actually. My personal experience is only on the theoretical basis. We have not studied this in detail for a potential application.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Georgios. I think, as I said, I think the number of projects that we see is very limited and tend to be limited to much larger owner companies who possibly have other ways to finance that or other ways to actually implement that through long-term charters, etc.
Yeah.
It's obviously a very specialist area, it's true. Piyush, just to come back to you, on maybe focus more on the new construction side and the kind of projects that you've possibly been looking at or from your experience. Where do you see the new construction order book at the time? Like maybe starting off with containers, what's your feeling about the market at the moment?
Yeah, I can tell about what we are involved in terms of construction. We do involve ourselves on the new building side, new building supervision. We are very much right now involved in projects on the lower end of the spectrum, not the larger sizes, but more the feeder vessels. And there we see different type of constructions happening, dual fuel possibilities. Also, we have some other developments on the different vessel types, like the tanker side, which is more methanol driven. Mm-hmm. But on the containers, mostly, as you see, LNG, methanol, these are the flavors of the day today, which are involved in the new building supervision. And there, ammonia is still to take off. We don't see much happening. But most of the vessels that are coming in the new building supervision are mostly on the LNG and the methanol side.
Yeah, that pretty much covers our view as well, actually, Piyush, from a class society perspective. I think I think if you go back a couple of years, maybe 3 years ago, then Maersk was obviously a leader in that, in ordering methanol vessels. And now if you look at the types of ships, especially in the container sector, that are being ordered, there's a much bigger focus back onto LNG.
Actually, that's a small quip I can put here, Colin. Way back 2015, we as NSB Group were involved in designing an LNG vessel with a charterer. Unfortunately, at the very end, the charterer decided not to go ahead. And we touted this project out to many other players. And everybody pushed the door back and said, oh, sorry, LNG not interested. This is not going to be the future. And today, when we see in retrospect, we can only say, hindsight wise, but that is how the markets have been. So today, the markets are following a trend, and that's why we see so much of LNG. In the past, 2015, when we were pioneers of sorts trying to build a design, there were not many takers. So obviously, the market develops more reactive than active, as we see today.
Yeah. Holger, another question for you, possibly a theoretical question, but if one of your clients came to you with looking for your advice, let's assume they have deep pockets, they're willing to invest in the ships that they own that are managed by you. If you take let's move to a different segment. If you take a bulker, whether it be handy size or slightly larger, doesn't matter, what kind of things would you be looking at? What kind of advice would you give them in terms of alternative propulsion, in terms of energy-saving devices?
Yes, this is not just theoretical. Actually, we went through these exercises several times, not only in the bulker segment, but especially also in the bulker segment. We came to the conclusion that, as I mentioned before, each of the ships, each of the cases needs to be treated individual. There is always a certain, pool of options that you can actually use as a technical, advancement for the ships to retrofit. You can do a lot of, different PBCS, for instance, where I remember I've been promoting this 30 years ago, and everybody was just slamming the doors on me and saying, PBCS, oh, come on, we have everything we need, we don't need to pay anything extra. Times have changed, fortunately, and the funny thing is now PBCFs are very standard items that are, let's say, qualified for retrofits also for bulkers. You can save quite a lot of different, let's say, percentages on the energy consumption. In combination, what we exercise with Navis ducts, for instance, we can also save up to, I mean, in our not only theoretical but practical experience, we could have saved up 6 to 7.5%. Which came quite interesting. And then, in addition, with a new coating as well, let's say with a low friction coating, I would call it, we came up with another, let's say, 2.5 to 3%. So quite enormous. And the investment, and that is, of course, something that the owners always ask for, is how much does it cost? How much will it bring me if I'm going to put this on board, if I, let's say, weld something, let's say, some gimmick on top of it, and that is, in each single case, we need to treat it very special. In the bulker segment, we have some of the ships that are purely commercially operating. Nobody's really interested in, let's say, asset preservation, although we can always propose what's possible. So we are acting as advisors, as technical consultants, with also our own marine engineers that we have on board. But at the end of the day, the ship owners need to decide what he really wants to take. And I must say, several of the ship owners are still very much commercially minded. And if that doesn't make sense for them, let's say on a short return of investment, several of them will still shake their heads.
Okay, interesting. Do you think, I mean, this is certainly what we see, that the degree of complexity in making any kind of decision is so high
it is,
now that it's almost like a form of paralysis in the market from many owners, totally understandably, that to actually get to a point where you make a clear decision with
yes.
all these variables is it was always difficult, but I think nowadays it's become almost exponentially more difficult.
It is, so to speak. I mean, if you look at, let's say, different investment types of, let's say, technical innovation that we can put on board, we start with, let's say, PBCF, $200,000 to $300,000. Depending on size and, of course, application, then we are looking at, for instance, flattener rotors. Flattener rotors are costing these days, I remember we started with 250,000 per piece. Now we are talking about 1 million to 2.5 per rotor, per motorsail. We are also involved at the moment in some innovation also on technical sales on board of the ships, on board of new buildings. We are also acting there as consultants. But the, let's say, shipping price, also from the new building side, when it's a row ship or a bulker at the moment, will be easily coming up to 40% on top of the usual standard price. And ship owners, and of course the guys operating these ships and charterers, need to understand that there is a kind of investment necessary to make that come at once.
Okay. Thank you, Holger. Clemens, come back to you. Regarding fleet renewal, what you see. I'd like to read out another quote from a famous investor from the past who said that an intelligent investor is a realist who sells to optimists and buys from pessimists. How do you see the market at the moment? Do you see the party continuing for many years to come? I mean, those of us that have been in shipping long enough believe that what goes up or no, it always has to come down again. But in maybe specifically on the segments that you're involved in, how do you see the mood with your clients? Are they still willing to invest and order more ships, or are they becoming more cautious because of the order book?
Well, it's obviously quite different to the various segments we cover, and it's no secret that the container market is looking full of container ship orders, but in the feeder segment, certainly not. But to make asset prices or new building prices and long term charter rates match, that's a challenge. So the existing fleet will trade for a while because it's debt free, even so it's old. So there we see a reservation. We do see some new building orders on the MPP side. And on MPPs, you always have to keep in mind as well that a lot of cargo they're transporting, also there's a certain age, not restriction necessarily, but preferences. Like you have on tankers, once a ship is 15 years old, you know, maybe Siemens doesn't want to put their gas turbine on it, etc. So there's a little bit of pressure and that segment to renew. But also there, price is obviously high. And how far the container order book is taking away break bulk cargo in the future as well, is there's a threat. So uncertainty maybe a little bit on the cargo volumes. But what we see in particular is new building orders on the short sea segment. And I think if you take the number of ships the German ship owners are building at the moment is possibly the short sea ships, the biggest number of ships. There we see many traditional names, you know, Lena Blumberg, Carsten Reeder, and many others who have not necessarily published their new buildings yet are moving in that market. And there we see a big jump on really the new ships. In that segment, we have an average age of 24 years. Of course, the life expectancy is a different one there too. I looked it up, and I think it was 44 years old, the average scrapping age. Now. So that tells you a little bit about life expectancy. But the key thing is we didn't see any new building orders for many years. So the first and second generation eco designs, which came in 2013 and maybe 2019 and 20 in other markets, and never happened. And we see now a big jump on the new ships and also a high interest of charterers to secure these ships. I mean, you can order a 5,000 deadweight ton vessel today and get your charter for 2026 for two or more years. And there are not many markets where, you know, 2 years in advance you can get your charter. But there's such a jump on the NFG efficiency on these new buildings, but there's a really a lot of potential. And you know, we have seen 200 new buildings in the order book now, but it's just 8% of the fleet, so it's not over ordered compared to many other markets. And that's where we see particularly also from the German perspective, and the element which also plays a little bit into it is if you don't want to build in China and you want to go to other markets, and then you consider India, you know, then short sea is the only thing you can order there. You know, so that's also sometimes, you know, can play a role. And we've seen these arguments as well.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Clemens. Georgios, just to come back to you. You mentioned that your tanker has got an impressively young, your tanker fleet has got an impressively young average age. The bulkers and containers, Where do you see that? Do you see the average life expectancy of those ships you have going above and beyond what has traditionally been the case? Do you think that in terms of the technology and the life expectancy of those ships, if the market demands it, that you'll be running them when they're 25, maybe even 30 years old? Is that even thinkable?
Yeah, I mean, the main criterion is basically the vessels to be commercially attractive, to have competitive figures as regards the speed and their consumption. That's the commercial passport. And this is the number one criterion, absolutely. But of course, complementary to that, you can further basically extend the life of the vessel by also adapting technologies, by also the digitalization is helping us in that respect, because we can increase efficiencies. We can increase safety. Also, good safety is also good business. That's very, very important as well. Certainly, we can optimize our operations, both in cargo operations and also the voyage optimization. But the main criterion, absolutely, is the how attractive is a vessel from the engineering point of view. In the market. And that's why I said that the criterion is energy efficiency.
Yeah.
If this is not the right one, then certainly vessels have to lie in a second-tier market. This is my opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Thank you. Piyush, just come back to you. Obviously, you're a finance guy. I've just got a general question for you. If you had a windfall, yeah, if you won the lottery or whatever, where do you see yourself investing that money, or NSB, where it happened to NSB, or even advising your clients, whichever one? If you had a substantial, you know, three-digit million sum of money to invest, yeah, what would be the first thing that comes to mind?
Colin, I would go back to the quote of your famous investor to be realistic. And if you know, many of the ship owners, once they had a windfall, they definitely went out of shipping for a while. So that would be an interesting segment.
That's true.
Okay.
So go on a cruise.
No, I mean, see, shipping is very much there, but shipping is cyclical. So when you have a windfall and you want to be out, then you try to go to an industry where you think you can be retired for life. Mm. Shipping, you always remain active. That's why we enjoy shipping. And you always have to have the cycle. In fact, just over coffee break, I learned from a very seasoned investor that there is not going to be a shipping crisis for the next 10 years or so. So hopefully we are safe and happy. And he learned it from another group of few investors. So the crystal ball has been moving on and on. So for that reason, the windfall for now can be in shipping too, but preferably outside.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Very interesting. I think we're all in shipping because we love it so much, because it's so varied and so different. Whether people consistently generate long-term great returns is... it varies, I think, from time to time. We're obviously in a fantastic cycle at the moment, but it does remind me of a parallel, actually, from the UK in the farming industry, where I do remember somebody once being asked, if you won the lottery as a farmer, what would you do with the money? And they said, I'd carry on farming until it was all gone. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to be the case in shipping, and I think the mood is so positive at the moment. Yes. But those of us that have been in it for long enough do have an increasingly large question mark. You know, how, as I mentioned before, how long can the party last? We just have a few more minutes. I'd just like to go back to one theme which is close to my heart, which Holger mentioned, which is the crewing aspect of this whole discussion. And I totally agree with Holger that it's something that is often quite a way down on the agenda. But in terms of the actual importance of the issue, it should be at the top, or very close to the top, I believe. So I'm just wondering also, maybe you touched on it already, Holger, but from either from NSB or from Anizal's perspective, either of you, Piyush or Georgios, what kind of training or actions do you see being needed from a crew perspective to deal with all these new technologies that are coming up, or what kind of actions are you already taking?
George, you want to go?
Yes, I mean, we have adopted a lot of new technologies, smart technologies on our vessels. And the challenge is basically to provide the clarity on the operation, to provide the clarity as regards the duty of the officer and the duty of the machine, the human machine story. Because we have seen that in our industry, and we have not good track record in our industry, we're very fast in adopting new technologies, but basically we confuse our people. We are not so good in developing and examining the human factor before to prepare the crews well, before we ask them to work on the new technologies. So yeah, this is basically is a change management process. It's accepted training, which is certainly important and vital. It's basically the obligation of the company to identify all these change measures and communicate the change methods very clear, and the expectations also very clear, and define the success measures. What we expect from the adoption of this technology and what not to expect. It is very, very important.
Yeah. Well, George, clearly on that score, you're the right man to do it, because I do remember noting, and I didn't read it out before, that you do have a master's in change leadership, I believe.
Yeah.
So it fits perfectly. Great. Great. Okay. Just
to add on to that,
very
quickly, I think the two words that come to mind are training and upskilling. And, you know, as we always hear, it's the crew, but I would say there's also a big importance of the shore staff. Today, technology is changing at such a pace that the people ashore need to be able to adapt to that, to be able to mentor the crew. So I would say training is on both angles, not only crew focus, but also on the shore side. So that's sort of my two bits on this one.
Yep, great. Thanks, Piyush. Okay, we're pretty much out of time now. Just one, Holger did mention the subject of wind power. just as a general message, just in case anybody is interested in talking to me about it afterwards, we do have one of the global wind power experts in Hamburg next week at our offices in Lloyd's Register, where we'll be giving a presentation on our view on wind power and what the pros and cons are and results and feedback. So if anybody's interested in attending, please let me know.
On that subject, actually, on the short sea side, it's actually maybe quite interesting that we have a lot of short sea ships which are prepared for wind. So pretty much all the new buildings we do have the strengthening of putting sails, or maybe just might be a container you install. But there's a lot of preparation, at least for that the steel is there in the ship to take wind as well.
Agree, Clements. I've just noticed that our clock is now flashing red, so maybe the power's going to be turned off any second now. I don't know. So anyway, thank you very much to all our panelists. It was a very interesting discussion, and I hope everybody enjoys the rest of the day. Thank you, Clements.